This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Earth Matters. I'm Lee Chui Lin. It's back to school and work for many today after the long Chinese New Year break, and what better way to beat the blues than to start planning your next break? Joining me today is Andrew Sebastian, the co-founder and CEO of the Ecotourism and Conservation Society of Malaysia, or EcoMai for short, to give us some insight into Malaysia's ecotourism sector and to also make the case for choosing a sustainable holiday whenever possible. Welcome back, Andrew.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So how are things going at EcoMai? Give us a progress report.
Well, happy Chinese New Year.
Thank you.
Year of the Monkey is very interesting. We have a lot of primate species here. So using that as an example, we have a lot to showcase in terms of primate, the world's planet of the apes, if you want to think about that. Yeah. So it's a good start that the Year of the Monkey, and here we are today talking about ecotourism, and that gives you a quick glimpse about the next few minutes. Yeah. So EcoMai, what we're trying to do is using these flashpoints, you know, Year of the Monkey, you know, can we connect it to our daily lives? Can we connect it to an industry that we call ecotourism? Surely we can, because people pay a lot of money to watch wildlife in the wild. That's ecotourism. And where better to watch primates in the wild than Malaysia?
Have things been going well so far?
Yes, yes, yes. Unfortunately, as the case would be, we've seen only very recently, we just announced the extinction in the wild of the Sumatran rhino. So that is a big blow to us as a country. Although Sumatran rhinos do exist elsewhere, very few still survive in the wild. But for Malaysia, sadly, we can only see them in zoos now around the world. So that shouldn't stop us. Although tigers get knocked down, unfortunately, as what just happened, we have to move on. Malaysia is one of the 12 or 13 mega diverse countries in the world. We have still a lot to offer, but the message is clear. We need to protect the forest, because that's where all these beautiful, interesting things live. And we want tourists to come, ecotourists to come, to visit us so that they can view this wildlife in the wild. We need to make sure it's protected, protect their homes first. So, no, we're not doing very well in protecting our habitats and wildlife, but we must learn from lessons and we must move on, and we must even double, triple our efforts now to make sure we protect the very thing that makes us unique to the world.
On that note, what is conservation tourism and how is it different from ecotourism? I mean, we're talking about protecting their homes. Is that what it's about?
Yes, yes. Gone are the days where on one side you have all the greenies who say, oh, protect the space, don't touch it, leave it alone. Oh, no, 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 no. And yeah, on the other side, people saying, if you have beautiful things, no, people must come and appreciate and have a look. So where's the middle ground? So the middle ground is ecotourism, where, yes, Taman Negara, for example, is a unique place. It's one of the world's oldest rainforests in the world. It's home to unique animals. Come and watch it. Come to Kuala Tahan or Kuala Koh, you know, drive there, stay in the local resort or chalets, go for the trail walks, beautiful, you know, photograph, experience nature in the rainforest, and go back. We're not asking, hey, all 27 million visitors from 2014. Hey, all 27 million, let's take them all into Taman Negara and walk around. No, we're saying go into the established trails and so on, where it's open for the public. And 95% of Taman Negara, for example, is not accessible to the public, and it's not supposed to be. So that's the core eco zone for the wildlife. Leave them alone. The areas where we allow public is just a small percentage of that. So ecotourism means come to Taman Negara and watch, understand, spend some money there, so the local communities benefit from you visiting them. Experience the local culture, take photographs only, do no harm, and go back home with happy thoughts. And we have to manage that. Conservation and conservation tourism is another new wing and new idea. It's all related to the same idea where do no harm, come and look at nature, be as less in terms of impact as you can, go back happy. Tell your friends so more people can come and we can manage that. Nature tourism now talks about doing more than just watching as a tourist. It has also to do with volunteerism, for example, where you go to Taman Negara, for example, and you take part in a conservation activity. So you go to Taman Negara to help reforest a certain area. You replant trees. You take part in their Kela breeding project, for example. You help with researchers doing work there. So it is a new, well, it's not new. It is an avenue in which we cater to a new market of young to meet age travelers who have the time, who have taken time off from their work to come to a beautiful country like Malaysia and get involved in an activity, in a conservation activity in Malaysia.
A lot of travelers, however, don't always, I mean, you have your ecotourists, people who know what that's about, people who care about it. But you also have, I think, the rest of tourists, the rest of the travelers who don't necessarily think, what are the problems of the world? You know, how do I make sure that my environmental and social sustainability needs are being met? How do I, you know, cut down my footprint when they make their travel plans? What would you say to them? How would you change their minds?
Well, that is one of the silver linings, as it were. Travelers are more and more savvy now because there's so much information on the internet. So much of experiences people share, their trip advisors, lots of Lonely Planets. So there are lots of interesting resource materials out there. So people are learning. You know, if you go to a certain area, you know, there are certain rules and you're not supposed to do and so on. So people understand. I would love to say there is one website that you go and you get the complete A to Z of being a responsible traveler. There are quite a few of them, but there's not really one just for Malaysia. Maybe we need a very specific website or portal for that. But I think, giving credit, a lot of travelers are even more better informed than the local service providers, for example. Yeah. So I see that as a silver lining because it seems like a lot of people are taking a lot of effort to learn about Malaysia before they come, or even when they choose Malaysia as a destination. So I would think that locally, as Malaysians, we have to prepare ourselves because the world knows about us. So we have to prepare ourselves. We have to make sure we have high standards of service, for example, and we have high standards of in nature guiding, for example. We have good materials and so on. And to the world out there, I think there's a lot of information. A lot of it are not necessarily accurate. So people have to learn more on how to sieve off the wrong information and the right information. Malaysia is pretty much a very stable country where people can come all year round to take part in nature activities. And I think if we can prepare ourselves and give a common portal where we give people the right information, I think that's one step towards selling Malaysia.
What, in your view, is the most important aspect or factor of sustainable tourism that needs to be pushed forward?
I think apart from local community participation, I think visitors come and go. The only regular permanent feature in ecotourism is the local community component, for example. So if we empower the local community, for example, in Bangkok, for example, if you empower the local communities there to take stewardship or take ownership of the trails or the corals or whatever it is, you know, so that more visitors can come and enjoy and go back. And they see that they are actually earning money from protecting nature. Our job is already done. Yeah. Long story short, I think if A, the local communities understand ecotourism, if they understand why people are coming, and if they are very happy to help protect locally all the local assets, I think job is already done. I think that's a key element for ecotourism or sustainable tourism.
What types of destinations are most or least vulnerable to the negative effects of tourism, and why would you say so?
Well, it would seem islands. We are blessed with beautiful islands, East Coast, West Coast, East Malaysia, you know. I would flag the islands being, I think, one of the most sensitive, both on the land and in the underwater side of it. Because any development on the island will affect not just the island, it'll affect the water quality around them. Yeah. So, and any activity that you do in the water also affects the marine ecosystem, which is even more fragile. Yeah. So I would think the most important in terms of concern, So when we develop islands, when we turn them into marine parks or state parks, for example, we have to make sure it has the highest possible standards in terms of what can or cannot go on that island.
I'm speaking today with Andrew Sebastian, co-founder and CEO of the Ecotourism and Conservation Society of Malaysia, or ECOMAI. With that, of course, we're talking about sustainable tourism, ecotourism, conservation tourism. Up next, we find out the positive benefits that this can bring to the environment. You are listening today to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today, Andrew Sebastian, co-founder and CEO of ECOMAI. We're talking about sustainable tourism. So aside from the benefits to local communities, which can be manifold, what kinds of positive benefits can tourism bring to the environment? And how can we harness those benefits?
Well, we are talking about a shift for Malaysia, at least. We are seeing, and only in recent times, we are seeing that our tourism, our tourist arrivals have increased. And with that, a portion of these tourists come to Malaysia because of nature. Yeah, of course, KLCC is always a draw, you know, things like that. But mostly, at least European, for the European visitors in the market, they certainly think about Malaysia. The image that they have in their mind is usually the orangutans, our rainforests, you know, the boats going up Taman Negara, you know. So in their mind, wow, Malaysia means to them orangutans or elephants and tigers, you know, and rainforests. So that is good, because which means I think we're pretty doing an okay job in promoting ourselves. What happens after that, I think that is something we have to sit down and think seriously about. Because we see Malaysia now being a big player in tourism. And that is the second income for the country, basically, now that's pulling us through is basically tourism. Yeah, and as I said, ecotourism is also a very interesting component in that. So not only do local communities will benefit if we get our act together and promote the country and develop our ecotourism products in concert with that one idea that we have to protect what we have and then enhance the viewability of people when they come to experience. We see from airline ticketing to hotel industry to the food industry, we see conventions coming in. We see golfers coming to spend holidays or even golf tourism. The income is manifold. And it's of course, no surprise to everybody, yeah, that you know, wow, tourism dollars is actually big. It's getting bigger, and we must somehow now learn to manage and learn to prepare ourselves. So a mind shift from the income for the country is dependent on industries, dependent on other sectors, have now changed to tourism. Yeah. So from thinking about plantations and so on, we are now thinking about, oh, tourism, you know. So that's a change in strategy. That's a change in mindset. And as a country, I think we have the unique position of rebranding ourselves, because not many countries in the world have 60% rainforest cover, for example, have beautiful islands, have beautiful hill stations to offer to the visitor, you know. So we are in a position to brand ourselves as one of the better ecotourism destinations in the world.
Once those dollars come in, though, once we have those visitors, how does that benefit the environment? Does it benefit it directly?
Yes. If ecotourism in its truest sense work, means people are getting income or getting benefit. And when the people are happy and they see that, my God, if I protect the Rafflesia sites here, more people will come and watch it, which means I get more money. You know, and everybody is happy. Yeah. What it means to the local environment is that the Rafflesia, for example, gets protected. And when people find a new Rafflesia colony, for example, they say, oh, let's protect this place and turn it into an ecotourism spot, you know, so that we also can earn money just like the folks in Ulu Groh, in Gopeng, for example, yeah, or the ones in Kelantan. So ecotourism, if it works, and it definitely works now, and that's why ECOMAI is trying to promote ecotourism, in its truest sense, means people will make money from it, people will benefit. And on the flip side, means people will respect, or people will actually start to get aware that, oh my God, I never knew we had whales in Malaysia, for example. I never knew we had river dolphins. oh, how do we make sure that they come back and they are safe? Let's do something. Oh, I never knew the world's biggest flower is found just 10 kilometers from my village, for example. And if people know that, people come and visit and I get a piece of the pie, you know. So nature wins. Conservation wins if ecotourism is given its due consideration and we practice it.
You pointed out earlier also that people know about Malaysia now. They know about our turtles. They know about our orangutans, our forests. What more is needed to enhance our local sites to become more ecotourism compliant? You know, what weaknesses are there? So say you have that community, they found the Rafflesia, they're like, okay, you know, now I'm going to turn this into ecotourism. Exactly. You know, what do they need to do to make it attractive? Yes.
Fortunately or unfortunately, we've done a lot of wrong things. In dealing with our natural assets that's given to us by nature. And I can only hope we learn from our mistakes. For example, the leatherback turtles in Terengganu. We were one of the best sites to watch the leatherback turtle landings in Rantau Abang. Not so long ago, it's 1960s. You know. I still remember it. Today, there's been zero leatherback landings in Rantau Abang. From 20,000 plus in the 60s to zero today. From tens of thousands of eggs to zero eggs today. The lesson learned here, manifold. Yeah? If there is a turtle landing site, immediately let's protect the beach and do not allow back-to-back resorts and chalets to be built quickly, you know, and harm the very thing that brought popularity to the spot. We must respect the natural assets we have. And I can only hope that a lot, I know and I work with a lot of good people who have the right intention. And we really do hope that they find partnerships in the government and find partnerships in the agencies and in the NGOs and how to best promote and how to best make sure it's sustainable in that sense. So my only hope, and that's why I think EcoMind was formed, we want to help. We are not experts in everything. But we see the light and we go out there and tell people and we come to BFM and we go on the show to tell people that we have the natural assets. If we can manage them well, there's no reason why all of us can live together and benefit. Yeah. So, yes, if they find this, if the local communities find this nice community of leaf monkeys near them and or this Rafflesia and so on, there are a lot of experience that can teach them how to turn that into a proper ecotourism product.
You travel across the country on various nature expeditions and tours. So we've talked about, you know, Rantau Abang and how that's one end of the spectrum. On the other end, what are some locations here in our country that do encapsulate the sustainable tourism experience?
Well, there are quite a few. And I'm very happy that it seems to be growing. Yeah, older properties who are now going into ecotourism, buildings are going into green building indexes, for example. Sustainability are in as part of their business plan now. Yeah, so it's very nice. I don't know whether I can mention specific names now without promoting them outright, but there are a lot of nice things happening in a few spots in Langkawi. There are nice things happening in Pangkor, as I said. There are wonderful things happening in Fraser Hill even. Yeah, Kuala Selangor, there are nice stuff going on. In Terengganu, for example, there are beautiful development happening, nice properties selling nature. So there are a lot of nice spots happening. Sabah, Sarawak goes without saying, they're doing really well. Around the world, people know Sabah, they know Sarawak, you know, they've been sold the idea, they love it, and people come. So a lot of people seem to be doing well. All we are hoping for is it is all developed in an integrated manner. So not just promote your one product. I think we should do it as a country. Although that's challenging, but we are here. We have the products. It's just that, can we get ourselves together? Can we get ourselves organized and do it better?
Bali was recently named the world's second best island in a survey by Travel and Leisure magazine. And the governor of Bali, while welcoming the news, said that he hoped this recognition would motivate Bali to become a quality tourism destination as opposed to its current inclination to its mass. What are your thoughts on this?
Yes, I think it's spot on because this is exactly what the market is demanding. So travellers are saying, I want to go to a spot that is not so commercialised. I don't want to go there where there are thousands of people. Of course, Indonesia is not saying the whole of the country, you know, we don't want mass tourism. It's just Bali because their way of life and their the way they do business are changing. Of course, you know, masses of people go into Bali because it's so famous. It's victim of its own success, you know. And the locals see that, my God, our values are changing, you know, because of the demands of tourism and the mass tourism, yeah. Our sites are getting deteriorated a bit because too much people, yeah. So that's a good move because every corner, every product, if they can rebrand themselves and say, right now we're going to limit the number of people coming. We only want X number of visitors. I think that's a brilliant idea because people will want to pay more if they get quality service. And this is not a new concept. There is a carrying capacity for Kinabalu, for example. Not everybody can climb. There is a limit to the numbers climbing up. Sipadan, there is a limit to the numbers of daily travelers and so on. So we're talking about the same thing, of course, in a bigger scale. So, for example, if at some point we designate an island as a truly ecotourism experience, visitor numbers are limited. People will be lining up to be on the waiting list, you know, and they'll pay more. And I can only think that it's going to be win-win for everybody because quality, if you get the quality and you get the not so much the quantity, it lessens the impact on the natural. Unfortunately, all our eco sites, we can lose it in an instant because too many people go to one spot and it's always very unique, fragile places that we go to. Yeah, so we need to keep an eye on the number, keep an eye on the bigger picture, so to speak. So yes, Bali seems to have said the right thing. And I think we can only look forward to greater things from Bali if they go down this same road. Yeah, and it's something that we must take note of. We ourselves in Malaysia, we can sort of designate areas where we want to focus on quality tourism, not quantity.
When it comes to local tourist sites, how do you translate sustainability into hands-on actions?
Easier said than done, yeah? Easier said than done. So, local sites. For example, I would say, let's take Langkawi, for example. Because it's a big island, the masses go to your Pantai Chenangs and your underwater world or whatever it is, the cable car and so on, yeah. But a niche few can also go to Kubang Badak, for example, or they can go to some of the marsh areas and help the local, our local NGOs there replant trees, for example. They can go up to Gunung Raya instead of just watching the hornbills. They can take part in the tree planting exercise to the enrichment planting where we're planting fruiting trees going all the way up so that the hornbills and the other wildlife can feed. So there is room for everybody to run and take part in special activities, for example. So the hands-on experience is available if you are able to understand the products and if you're able to actually come up with clear, interesting activities so that we actually help the local product.
Aside from that, what are some volunteer tourism options we can take in Malaysia? You know, we're talking about people coming here, but for the people who are already here, you know, what should we be doing? What can we do? Yes.
Well, let me flag, there's a nice Terrapin project in Kemaman. They're always looking for volunteers to help them the releasing of the terrapins into the wild. For example, yeah, they incubate the eggs. The local community is doing a good job in protecting the nesting sites. Yeah, so if you are local, for all locals out there, there are a lot of all these nice opportunities where you can actually get involved. Take your kids, go to Kemaman, for example. You know, contact the local NGO who's running it and say, hey, we want to be part of that. You know, I want my kids to experience the releasing of turtles into the river. There's a turtle day where they're going to release hatchlings back into the river and so on. So that is just one example. There are two or three things that's happening around the country all the time. Sabah is world famous. In fact, there's a waiting list. If you want to go to Sabah and volunteer working with the orangutans, for example, there is a long queue. You're not the only one. There's a long queue from people interested, not just in our country, but around the world. People want to go and spend a few months helping out with the orangutans or even the pygmy elephants program, for example. So in Peninsula, there are quite a few things happening. Not a lot, quite a few happening. And I think Tourism Malaysia is trying to help promote things like that. But it's certainly coming up. And I'm actually involved in one or two of them. And I'm hopefully we get to showcase these sites once they are ready. Once they're ready.
Once you've shored up everything.
And yes, once we're
it's all good.
Yes.
Having said that, I imagine that with the green dollar, you know, kind of coming in, people wanting to spend it, a lot of companies and tourism sites might be into greenwashing, marketing sustainability more than actually practicing it. For instance, we went to Phuket as a company a few years ago and people got very excited about the Tiger Kingdom, you know, going there thinking that, oh, this is them helping tigers. Yeah. When in fact, of course, it's just, we all know what it is. And people just wanted to take reefies, you know, with tigers. Right. What should we be looking out for so that we don't get duped into supporting things like this, cruelty to animals?
Correct. So this goes again to the information that we get on the web, you know. So you research, you say, I want to go somewhere. And while I'm there, I just want to go and have a look at this beautiful thing there about tigers and so on. I want to go, you know, la, la, la. So if you want to see tigers in the wild and make sure you're part of a program that is actually doing what it says.
Helping tigers. Helping,
yeah. Any place that you can actually close enough to pet a tiger or take a reefie or something doesn't sound right to me already. So wildlife, we have to respect. We have to be not able to be touching them, for example. You know, so then it's no different than you touching your pet cat at home, you know. I'm very cautious about things that people allow you to hold. You know, you can feed this thing, you can hold that. That already is a red flag for me. Ecotourism means you go to a natural area. So, for example, the tiger comment that you made was spot on. It is not ecotourism. You're not going to go there just to take a photograph with a tiger, because tigers at some point will get angry and they're already stressed as it is. Someday it's going to lash out, someone's going to get hurt, which has happened, yeah? So you want to watch tigers in the wild, in a proper safari atmosphere where you're away from them and you're not feeding. Maybe go to India, you know, where there are tiger reserves, you know, and they are quite well run. So again, information on the internet, you know, you'll get everybody saying, come to me because our place is fantastic. You get to touch this, you get to feed that and so on. You need to be able to sift that out. You want to write back to them. We want to see things in the wild and we don't want them artificially being fed, for example. And we're not just there to take a photo of this animal or sitting on our shoulder. For example, so if you are that kind of tourist or you aspire to be, or if you're planning your next holiday, I think a little bit more research will unveil the manner in which the operations are run, for example. So in my mind, going somewhere to pet a tiger or something is already a red flag.
What are some nature activities that we can do to get close to nature without actually harming them? You know, to see a tiger, but not necessarily feed a tiger.
Okay, so it's already happening, you know, bird watching, nature photography, whale watching, snorkeling, you know, these are all things that are not so intrusive, you know. Well, there's of course a gray line between, you know, if I'm a bird watcher, do I feed birds so that the birds come out from the wild and I can photograph them, you know. So we're talking about questionable ethics in that sense. You know, if I'm a photographer, for example, you know, what happened in Singapore, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen here in Malaysia, they put styrofoam into fishes so that it floats and they chuck it into the lake. So the fish is actually floating so that the raptors can come and feed on the floating dead fish. So is that ecotourism? That's not, yeah. That's terrible, yeah. So we need to find out, and we need to be clear that, you know, we need to respect nature and assets that we have to come to see. So if you're bird watching, come and bird watch. Engage a certified guide who knows what he's doing, for example. If you are a diver, do a search to find out whether the dive master or dive operator is certified. They have best practices. They have high standards, you know. Ask them whether does your dive masters, do you feed eagles, for example, and so that we can take a photograph or can touch it or pet it, or do we feed sharks so that people can. So that already tells you whether are they serious in terms of being an ecotourist provider or not.
How do you manage expectations for tourists who, you know, think that, no, if I go on this dive, I must see a turtle. And if I, you know, and if I go out into the wild, I must see, you know, this animal. And that's how you get all these crazy actions, right, to guarantee these sightings.
Well, again, we are a victim of our own success. A lot of photographs out there, you know, people have taken amazing photos of a lot of wonderful things underwater and on land, you know. So people want that photo as well. You know, I also want, you know, I bought this expensive camera. camera, you know, I want to go for this dive and I want to see a whale shark. That's exactly the problem in the Philippines right now, because there's one spot where the whale sharks are being fed. They've been kept in an area because they're being fed so that more people can come and swim with the whale sharks and take photographs, you know. That's not ecotourism. In fact, that's quite cruel. That's bad practice. There are two sites in Philippines where you can watch whale sharks. One site does not feed them, one site feed them. So again, we come to a dilemma where I'm a diver from the Americas and I want to see a whale shark, you know. I want to go on a dive. If you can guarantee me, you show me, I will come and I'll take your package, you know. So that's the dilemma we faced, especially as nature guides, for example. We need to manage expectations. So that first email that comes through, we're going to say, thank you for thinking about this. We have a high level of respect for our product. For example, we do not feed the wildlife, yeah. But we are going to go to a site where the whale sharks are found. And the best time to see the whale sharks are, for example, in October, November. We see most of our sightings in that period. So if you want to see, chance to see the whale shark, please come in this period of time. And your chances are increased. We cannot guarantee, I'm sorry. You know, because we do not feed and we really we're not supposed to feed. In fact, the frontliners have to also educate the visitors because, as you said, we have to manage the expectations. You're coming to a place to see it in the wild. And if you are really serious, if the dive operators are really serious, you know, they'll be able to educate and yet get the business.
So the next time I'm looking for a holiday that's as sustainable as possible, I decide this is what I want to do. Yes. What should be on my checklist? What should I be making note of?
Google is amazing, you know, the amount of things that you can find, yeah. So you can Google a place and you can Google an activity at that place to find out what have people experienced before, what are some of the problems, you know, what are some of the issues, you know. And I tell you, the whole process of choosing a place gets you even more excited because you tend to learn a lot more than you ever thought possible, you know, of a certain place. And I think that adds on to the experience. You know, I'm going to go to this new place and I heard about this and I went and researched and I found out A and B and I also found out there are other things you can do while we're there, you know. So the world opens up to you when you do a little bit more research. And I'm telling you, you're going to be a lot happier if everybody does this. You do your research, you get that information, and when you go, you know already what you want to do. And there's no shame in taking part in mass tourism activities. That's fine, you know, but leave a day or two, or you know, to partake in that really special experiences where you walk into a forest or you take that swim or that dive, yeah, knowing that you're not sure what you're going to see. Life is exciting that way, yeah.
Even if I don't decide to embark on an eco trip, what are some ways overall that we can travel more responsibly? Because we're all aware, you know, we're flying all over the place. Yes. You know, the way we travel isn't necessarily the most green.
Yes, yes, of course. Well, that's interesting case study. I won't mention the airline. So, yes, we have a carbon footprint. We have an impact on our everyday life, not just traveling for a holiday. So if I'm going to go to Resort A, and I like the place, I got good reviews, and I know they're doing nice things. They have a nice forest around them. They have a beautiful garden, for example. They have a good dive operator who runs tours. That's fine. I write to them and say, hey, I'm coming, and I want to plant some trees. Because, you know, I'm mindful of the impact I have. I want to plant some trees. I want to contribute to the local NGO who's doing some work there. I want to help the local community, you know. Please give me options. So if everybody does this, the resource will be so much happier because then they see the demand and the request, you know, and they know people are watching and reading about them. So if I were you, if I was planning such a trip, I would write ahead to say, listen, I'm coming, I'm bringing my kids, or I'm coming and I'm mindful about my impacts. I want to help plant trees. I want to help paint a local school, for example. I wanted to come and donate some books, you know. I want to help. With my trip there, I want to do more than just come on a holiday. I want to do something else. So the hotel will be very happy to hear this kind of emails because they know that you are one of those guests who will come back. You know, if they see, wow, we are doing things nice and all that. So the market will demand for it. And if more providers get involved and say, oh, no, no, we must do things, you know, we must have a tree planting program, for example, we must adopt a school, we must adopt an orphanage, we must adopt a village, for example, you know. And I think if we manage that well, things will fall very beautifully in line.
For more information on EcoMai, you can visit ecomai.org or like the Ecotourism and Conservation Society of Malaysia's Facebook page. Thank you very much for coming in, Andrew.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
I've been speaking with Andrew Sebastian, co-founder and CEO of the Ecotourism and Conservation Society of Malaysia, or EcoMai. We've been discussing sustainable tourism today on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.